Back on WPTF with the Weekend Gardener, and we're in Lillington at J.E. Wumble and Sons, and folks walking around trying, it's just overwhelming in here. I was trying to think of some things I might need, but then I just look around. That's how they got you.
Yeah. Right.
You find something.
Right.
You find something, and it's, oh, I need this. So
so many things.
It is. And well, Gary Pierce is with us, a retired extension agent. And you taught school, too,
I taught high school for 12 years.
That's wow. How about that? Did you teach horticulture?
I did. I taught natural resources and horticulture.
Great.
So,
How about that?
It really helps you, of course, whether you're in extension or whatever you're doing. There's two ways Ann was talking earlier. There's two things, I think, that really help you learn whatever your hobby is. One is to do it, and that's what we were talking about earlier. And the other one is to try to teach somebody how to do it.
Right.
Those two ways make you really look at it differently and in detail and figure things out.
Right.
I'm sure you've noticed how dry it is. I'm sure it's very dry in Harnett County. Y'all have more of a sandy soil here.
It's highly variable, but there's areas that do have some serious sand.
Even rough. But I know the Raleigh area is in severe drought right now, and that's affecting a lot of things. We were riding down through on 401 and noticing all the soybean fields. We were talking about that with Congressman Etheridge, and it's just been the corn hasn't performed like we were hoping this year. So it's been a tough time for farmers, but it's been a tough time for homeowners too and their plants. Water sprinklers everywhere I go. People are watering something.
Well, with the farmers, it's a double-edged sword right now. The time for praying for rain is pretty much over. You don't want it to rain now, or you're going to have a trouble getting stuff out of the field. But with the homeowners, the time for doing things, a lot of things, is we're in the zone. And especially the number one thing that people are concerned with, which is their grass, we're in the zone for that right now. So if you have cool season grasses, then they're actively growing. And so fertilizer and water and all goes good together. So a little bit of rain would be fantastic. But if it's warm season grasses, a lot of people don't realize they're getting ready to go dormant. But if you're going to, if it's not centipede and it needs lime, it's a good time to lime it. And if it is centipede or Bermuda grass, it's a good time to put potassium out there. You know, what did old timers used to do to the yards in the fall? The warm season grasses, y'all know?
No, I do not.
They strike a match.
Burn it off.
Heck
yeah.
That's exactly what they did.
It takes care of a lot of the weeds.
Burn a lot of brush or burn leaves and things, but I didn't know they did that to the yards.
But what they would always say, it was empirical data, obviously, but what they would say is, it gets so much better in the spring when you burn it off in the fall. But what were they doing? They were releasing that potassium, that potash was being released. And so, those warm season grasses did do better. But nowadays, of course, with the subdivisions and all, you don't really want to be out there burning. It's a drought right now.
That is one thing that is frowned upon.
Well, I was just trying to fix my lawn. Burn half the county.
Yeah,
now.
Sure, Max, sure. So what about people? Centipede is the happiest grass here in Harnett County?
In this... this is a funny area here. I mean, Raleigh, it's kind of a diagonal line that comes from the northeast North Carolina and cuts across and catches through Raleigh and then goes heads on south, west of Raleigh. And north of that, in Raleigh area, is your cool season, and below that, which is what we are, and east of that is going to be your warm season grasses. And centipede, by far, is the number one because you don't have to fertilize it and all these things. You just pray for rain, and if you put some potassium on in the fall, it grows like gangbusters. And we used to call it poor man's grass because...
We used to call it, Irv Evans used to call it, if you knew Irv.
I
used to call
very
it,
well.
He used to call it the lazy man's grass.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes. He was right. Yeah, I'm not, I'd rather say poor than lazy.
I know. We're not trying not to disparage anybody here.
Right.
Well, Gary, I'm more than lazy. I'm a clover man.
Okay. There's nothing wrong with that.
That's right.
I have all these friends that work themselves to death over having the perfect lawn.
And I love it. They're beautiful.
And I love to watch them.
Yeah.
but I put my clover out.
Right.
I love to see the bees working.
Right.
And I have a theory. If you're not into grass, my theory is if it's green, mow it.
Yeah.
Right.
And I have so many plants in my, so many trees and shrubs and things in my yard. I only have patches of grass. I've just said to heck with that. I have weeds.
Well, I'm a big advocate of the clover as well for lots of different reasons. The bees, obviously, is a big one. That is a really big one.
Yeah.
And it's not just the bees. Any of the pollinators, they love it. But bees especially love white clover. But the other thing is, if you like wildlife, I mean, rabbits and deer and all these types of things, but then the clover converting nitrogen to free nitrogen
for
shrubs or trees or whatever that's nearby. I mean, that's
great.
It is.
That's why
it
your plants are doing so well in your yard. A lot of camellias and things.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, have you ever heard of, Ann Claff got me on this one time, said take a little cottonseed meal and throw a handful on the camellia. I've done that off and on over the years, and it seems to do something. I don't know what it is, Gary.
Well, you add organic matter, you add micronutrients, so, you know, there's anytime you're adding any kind of composted carbon material that's in a stable form like that, it's going to do well.
Yeah.
We got Major Dave on the line, Rufus.
Oh, great.
From Virginia, calling us from Virginia, and he's quite a gardener. Major Dave, good morning, sir.
Good morning, my friends. It's so good to chat with you again.
Oh, it's great to hear from you. How was your garden this year?
I did not have one.
Oh, no. Did you give in to the deer or what?
No, actually, my work calendar was not going to give me the time to properly tend to it.
Oh,
and I
okay.
said, it's not going to hurt just to let that dirt lay fallow for a year and come back
that's
next
exactly
year.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, that's very true. And, for folks who are not familiar with Major Dave, he's up in the Virginia mountains. So it's kind of a different place to grow things. But I know you've grown some big crops for the food banks and all around you.
We have. And because of that, we devoted some energy to beautifying the yard. My daughter bought two white rose bushes, put them in about 24-inch round decorative concrete planters, one on each side of the front stairs at the bottom. And that's my question, because one of them has got two limbs that have shot up about 24 inches taller than the rest of the plant. And I need to shape it up, prune it back, and I didn't know when would be the best time to prune it and how much I could safely cut back without hurting the plant.
Do you know what type of rose this is or a name? Is it a name variety?
It probably is.
What do you think, Phil?
It's not a knockout rose. It's a standard blossom size.
Yeah.
Like you'd find
Grandiflora or a tea hybrid or...
Well, I tell you, Major Dave, it's great to talk to you. What you have to be really careful for is where is the sprout coming from? Is it coming from the bottom of the rose, or is it coming out from somewhere on the stem?
I'll have to look and check.
Well, let me tell you why. I've had some really issues lately with my roses. What they're doing is they'll come out below the graft, and so... that that sprout is like going to go crazy. It's not going to be the same color rose. It is the mother rose, so to speak. Yeah, from the stock, and it's not the best thing you can do is cut it all the way back down to the ground.
And when should he do that, Gary?
Now.
Exactly. As soon as you recognize that you're getting aggressive growth below that graft, it needs to be eliminated. And whether it's a rose, whether it's a fruit tree, it doesn't matter what it is. Anything that's grafted, when it comes from below the graft.
Japanese maple.
Exactly. Exactly. Unless you want a multicolored Japanese maple.
Right.
A green and a red one. Because
I have noticed that the blossoms are the same on those two shoots as they are on the rest of the plant.
Okay. Well, maybe it's okay then. I've just got a Tropicana rose, which is typically an orange rose. Uh-huh. It came out below the graft, and it is just as red as it can be. So it's part of the breeding that, you know, it came out below where it was grafted.
Can he tell where? Could you describe to him where the graft might be?
If it's the same color, it's probably the same rose.
It probably, but I mean, even that's going to be, you need to look at the leaves and some other things too, because I mean, a red rose could be a red rose. I mean, so.
That's true.
The graft and where it's coming out would be the best thing. It's what she said earlier, definitely would be the first key thing to look. But if it's above the graft, then, you know.
Just cut it back now.
Yeah. Cut it back now.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
A third, cutting a third off of it is a good rule of thumb that it's not going to hurt the plant.
Well, now, during the season when the blossoms die off, should I pinch off those old blossoms to help
you
it
should
take
cut
more
it back. I usually cut mine back to the second five-leaf segment. That may not be where I need to do it, but mine are doing fine. And I just go in, I count the first two sets of leaves or three sets, there will be three leaves, okay? And then you go on down, there's a five leaf, and then there's another five leaf. I cut right above that second five leaf. And that may not be, don't go to the book and look that up, but my roses are doing fine.
I don't find five leaves. I'll settle for four leaves.
Well, Gary, what doth thou say?
Well, I do agree that you need to cut them back, because if you don't, then that'll encourage more blooms. And if you don't, what happens is the energy is going to go into those hips. It's going to be into the plants think it's making seeds. It's producing viable seeds.
Just like pansies.
Exactly.
Right.
There's a lot of plants like that. But unless you want hips, unless you want to harvest
those
right, then you need to eliminate those right after they bloom. Deadheading, that's a form of deadheading.
Well, Major, does that straighten things out for you?
Well, it does, and it gives me something to do this afternoon.
All right, well, I'm sure you had other things, but I'm glad you can relax and do this.
That's true. And I wanted to tell Rufus, I regret I will not be able to come to your Super Kids event, but I will send you something.
Oh, God bless you. We'll miss you, Dave.
Yeah, we...
All right. Is your schedule busy right now and your projects, one of your voting projects?
Well, no, we're actually... Well, that's part of it, but we're homeschooling our grandkids this year. And they go to a hybrid school. They go to a church on Tuesdays and Thursdays to the actual school, but then Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays, we do the homeschooling here. It's working out very well because my daughter only works Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, so she handles Monday and Friday. But on Wednesday, my wife and I have to do it all ourselves. And
we'll teach them plenty about gardening and vegetables and all of that, too.
Well, Dave, I know, too, that you will be interested in this. I'm writing a new book on bringing back civility.
Awesome. I'll make sure to get me a copy. Let me know how much to write the check for.
Well,
Major, thank you so much for joining us.
I know what I know because I listen to the show.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
At ease.
As you were.
As you were. More of the Weekend Gardener coming up from J.E. Wubble and Sons in Lillington. All right, we're back on WPTF. hand it over to Sue a second there, Gary, and we're going to talk to Miss Sue here at J.E. Wumble and Sons about all that's going on today. Are you going to make a speech, or what can we look forward to today?
Not just a happy day in Lillington.
Every day's a happy day.
Every day's a happy day, and we're glad that you all are here. And
yeah, we are, too.
And we're having a blast here, and we just need you all to come on down now. It's almost 10 o'clock. Get out of that bed and get here to Wumble.
Dadgum right. It's 9:30.
Yes, come on down. We're waiting.
Sue, I have a special case knife. It's called Junior Johnson.
Okay.
And I really adore that.
Junior gave it to you, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
Got his name on his picture on it. And I love a case knife.
I do too.
And the worst thing in the world was I had one that my daddy gave me one time, and they confiscated it at an airport years ago and wouldn't give it back to me.
So.
So everybody needs a case knife.
That's yes,
right.
They do.
Yep.
Yes, we do sell case knives.
In fact, they have restocked.
Yes, we recently restocked.
It's
we got
beautiful.
From Chevrolet, the Chevrolet design, different car designs, and herringbone, different designs. Come on down here and see it for yourself. Don't take my word. Just come on down.
Yeah, and a lot of different materials are used for the exterior of the mm-hmm. case. I mean, there's steel, and then there's case bone. And
yes, and
antler and all kinds of stuff.
I think we had one person to come in about three or four the other day, and he came back yesterday and bought some more.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
So there.
Yes, yeah. And if you really wanted to see a good collection, you should have seen Ray Sr. Ray Wumble Sr. He had a beautiful collection of case knives.
Oh, wow.
And I think the grandboys got them.
Yeah.
But they were really beautiful.
That's wow. right. Well, you have a lot more than that. You have grills. People are grilling. People are feeding their lawns. They're doing all kinds of things. You mentioned earlier that y'all had Speed Queen appliances.
That Speed Queen is a great washer and dryer. I mean, it's commercial, and a lot of time you see them on the Army bases and in the laundromats, so Speed Queen.
Right.
So they're designed to last for 20
heavy
years,
duty.
25 years.
Oh, yeah. They're great.
I have the TR5 and the DR5, which is a dry washer and dryer. And, I mean, they submerge your clothes. They just don't spray them. They submerge your clothes under your clothes. They're really clean, smell clean, and it don't take long to dry them.
That's what I need because I always overload things, and it's going like that.
Yes. Well, they are so popular until the ones that we have now was probably ordered in May, and we sell out. We have a list of people who
I would think
waiting
so.
For them.
Wow.
But it's a really good product. And also there's the, like we said, the Traeger grills over there. They got Wilmington. We've got Yeti cups, Yeti coolers. We got some of everything.
You got a lot of stuff that lasts forever.
And you said something a little while ago about the washers and dryers that you have to have a service person.
Yes,
just for those.
Mm-hmm, before we could even get
that's impressive.
Yes, when we got set up to sell Speed Queen, I had to find somebody local who could work on them if there was an issue. So we got Hank's appliance service out of Andrews. So we have any issues, we send Hank.
Great.
And it's just like same way with steel. Like I say, you can't sell steel if you don't have a mechanic on campus.
That's right. Thank you so much, Sue.
Mm-hmm.
We'll talk to you some more coming up
on
the WPTF Weekend Gardener. We have news ahead. I don't know how in the world why have we not had Gary Pierce on the show before? That's flabbergasting. 40 years and I haven't had Gary Pierce on, but now I do. We're going to sign a contract today. All right, more of the Weekend Gardener coming up.
Listen.
All right, we're back on WPTF. Rufus is going to look at the case knives, and they are aplenty. Phil is diagnosing medical problems. Harrison's reading a book, and so we have Gary Pierce, who is a retired extension agent, and I'm serious. I don't know how in the world we missed having you on the show. You must have turned us down. It's the only thing I can think of. But at any rate, we talked a bit about cool season grasses, warm season grasses, things to do. You mentioned the potassium, potash with the warm season grasses, and the cool season grasses need plenty of water, and that can get expensive this time of year unless you have a well. But cool season vegetables are something that I don't grow a lot of cool season vegetables, but I consume a lot of turnip salad.
Right.
As long as I got a little fat back with me.
Right. Well, your cold crops, is typically this time of year, you think of cabbage, you think of collards, you think of Brussels sprouts, these asparagus, even asparagus, but these types of things, asparagus is a perennial, but these types of things are the things that you typically plant in the fall. And during the cool season, they grow. And then, like with the collards, you want the frost to concentrate those nutrients and sugars in the leaves. So you hear people say, you know, collards are not good until they get a frost on them. So you can plant them in August and fertilize them. They get real big and pretty, but you don't dare pick them collard leaves. The thing about the collards that I would have to say that I've learned over the last few years is, in this county especially, people save seeds a lot of times from collards, and they use what they call the cabbage collard. And it's a lighter color heirloom variety collard that they pass down. Does it affect the flavor? It absolutely affects the flavor.
Or does it, does it taste like a collard?
It does taste like a collard, but it's not quite as strong. It's not as thick, and the texture is a lot lighter. It's not as dark blue-green and a leathery feel to it. And so it has a different look. It looks more like cabbage.
So do you have to cook it down to submission, as Rufus would say?
Or? Well, let me tell you, the key to collards is this, and I've only learned this in the past few years being in this county as well. You cook, you boil the collards. Everybody knows that. And then you either go one of two routes. The route that I went growing up was the vinegar route. Then you put vinegar on it and try to kill the taste of the collards.
make
them palatable. the other route is you take the collards out and you lightly fry them in a frying pan.
Oh.
That is.
We don't batter them, though.
That's soul food right there.
Yeah.
That right there makes collards come to life. And depending on the grease that you use, your chicken grease or butter or whatever it is, it affects the flavor. But you only lightly fry them for just, 15, 25 seconds. And then you flip them, chop them up some in that frying pan, take them out. And let me tell you, you can eat them. You throw away the vinegar. You can eat them cold at that point.
Can you fry them in a little bit of bacon grease?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The bacon grease
Let's go make
some
now.
That's the number one go-to right there is bacon grease.
Yeah, better believe it.
But that right there, but you take the cabbage collard, and then you cook it in that frying pan after it's been boiled, and you've got something to be proud of right there. You'll look forward to January the 1st eating those collard greens.
I'm looking for. I'm going home. Well, I don't think I can find any good collards right now, but it had got cold.
Well, let me tell you another thing, how we pick collards. I mean, the way they sell collards, if you go to buy collards, the way they want you to do it is whack it off at the bottom and you pay per plant and take the whole thing. And that's fine if you're buying them. If you're growing them, you harvest them like you're priming tobacco. You start on them bottom leaves, and you harvest them bottom leaves, and then you wait a week or two, and then harvest again, wait a week or two, harvest again, and they'll last all winter long. And they keep growing, new leaves, you don't kill the plant, and then if you want to save seeds off the plants, you still have the flowers in the spring.
Nice.
So if you're growing them, that's the way to do it, to harvest them. You're a little bit different. But if you're buying them, obviously, they just want you to cut it off at the ground and take the whole thing.
What else should we be doing this time of year?
Well, let me throw in a plug for Walmart right quick. If you're thinking about buying collard seeds or any other kind of seeds, places like this time of year, we're all already so far into the fall that you need to come and get little plants to plant. So transplants is what you're looking at. It's too late for seeds right now, for collard seeds. But you'd want to plant them in August if you were going to put the seeds out. But this is a great place to buy seeds because this is one of the few places that still has seed. They buy seed by the bulk and sell it by the bulk.
All right.
So instead of buying a little pack for $2, you can buy an ounce for a dollar.
We're going to talk more with Gary Pierce and whoever else shows up this morning. Maybe Rufus and Phil will come back. Here at J.E. Wilmot & Sons in Lillington, here on the WPTF Weekend Gardener. All right, we're back on WPTF, and we're going to be talking about 10:30 to Monica Wood, manager of the State Farmers Market this morning. So we always look forward to, I guess Monica is dealing with the fair, too, because I think they have an exhibit out there. Boy, you haven't been to the fair yet, have you, Gary?
Didn't it just
start Thursday?
Thursday. Okay,
Thursday. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. No, sir. I mean, I work Thursday and Friday, and so...
Well, it's very popular this
right.
year because, I mean, there were a lot of people there on Thursday and a heck of a lot of people there yesterday because Phil and Rufus and I were out there doing some reports from the flower show, which is gorgeous. If you get a chance to go, go to the flower show, flower and garden show. I mean, it's five acres, something like that out there, and it just – do you know Dan Danford?
He's
in charge of it, and that's an extraordinary thing.
Years ago, I used to judge down there. I worked with Irv, mm-hmm. Irv Evans, mm-hmm. and I helped him judge for several years while I was extension agent.
He was my first co-host on this show.
Irv was Swervin' Irv.
he was an extension agent in Wake County, and he had been on a show called Ask Your Neighbor.
Right.
And so he was on with Mari, and then he was on with me. And when John Harris, the Tar Heel gardener, retired in 85, the company got Irv to come in, and he worked with us until he lost his voice, basically,
right.
in 91, 92, something like that.
Yeah, so. He's still doing well. He's gardening like crazy.
Well,
anything he does is going to be like crazy.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Loads up carts.
Boy, we know Irv, don't we?
Yeah, he was on meth before we knew about meth.
He took me to, he had tickets. We went to old Reynolds to watch a basketball game. It was just in the late 80s. And I never seen anything. It was a madman. I thought we were going to get arrested. This man was yelling and screaming at the refs and everything else.
I love
coming out of his seat.
Yeah,
he was passionate.
He was. Everything he did was wide open.
Right.
Yeah. Good old Nash County boy. God
you
bless him.
Like my Uncle John Holler, who was played for the Washington Redskins and my mother's brother. He became a referee afterwards. We went to Crossnor one time, and he backed
Uh-oh.
The car up. And he said, I said, why did you do that, Uncle John? He said, we got to make a quick getaway. And he had that car headed to Boone, and they were coming after him.
I bet he could holler, though.
Oh, he was a holler. H-O-L-L-A-R.
Did you notice that our professor friend
I was
from
out there thinking, when are they coming?
From Fayetteville is with us.
My friend, who's still ambulatory.
I don't think we saw you in July when we were here. We missed having you. I'm glad you're back with us this morning. Folks are so nice down this way. And Gary, I don't remember what we were talking about, we were talking about the cool season vegetables, and you were talking about cooking collards properly. But you had a little something different that I hadn't thought about that Rufus, I'm sure, would raise his hand in approval.
Frying the collards.
You boil them and then fry them, Rufus, and we decided that
Pam can do that. Pam's restaurant.
You don't have to batter them. You don't batter them.
That's right.
Right.
That's right. You take them straight out of the frying pan, and I mean straight out of the water. You kind of get the water out of them, douse the water out of them. You could press it a little bit. Put them in the frying pan, and just for a short amount of time, as you're laying them in there, you lightly chop them, and then flip them and lightly chop them, and then flip them and lightly chop them.
You did add some bacon juice, didn't you?
Bacon grease, chicken grease, butter for those that want to cut down on the grease. All of those add different flavors, but it's hard to beat bacon, obviously. But the funny thing is, the people that have never done that, they hear that, and it is quite the revelation. If you go do it, this is a revelation. But those that have done it look at you like, what? We've always done that. I mean,
I don't remember that.
My Aunt Mary never did that.
Oh.
Grandma was one of the best cooks ever, and she didn't do it either.
Y'all didn't do that in New Jersey, did you, Professor? Yeah.
They don't even know what collards is.
Oh, they might know what collards. They got farmland up there. So we need to talk to Brian in the Pinehurst area. Brian, do you ever had any fried collards?
No, sir. I don't believe I have. I've had fried cornbread before.
Oh, yeah. Well, they'd go good. That would go extra good with.
Yeah, actually, yes.
You can spread that bacon grease around.
It was a little bit different. So.
Yeah. Oh, what kind of cornbread? How did your mama make it?
Fully baked, kind of like a cake, I guess, if you will.
Skillet. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Right. Okay. Well,
I hope you had white cornmeal too. Now this stuff you get in restaurants is more like cake.
Right.
You got to have real cornbread.
That's right.
Yeah. With butter on it too.
Cornbread and milk.
Put enough butter on it.
I know. Yeah. It.
So, how can we help you this morning, Brian?
Oh, yeah, about the collards. You can put a ham hock in it, too, or a little fat bag.
Ham hock.
Oh, yeah.
Do that with cabbage, too.
Right.
Yeah. The reason why
I'm calling. Stop talking about food.
Yeah, I know, right? The reason why I'm calling is you guys were talking about cool season grasses. 2 weeks ago, I seeded my yard with winter rye. I didn't till it, didn't do anything, because years passed, I didn't really have to. I watered it, and I'm not sure if I got it watered enough when what little bit of rain we got last Sunday. I was hoping to be enough to let it germinate and take off, but seeds are still laying on top of the ground. It ain't germinated yet.
It's too dry.
Well, my advice, a couple things. If it was ryegrass, it should have germinated by now. So you definitely, the dryness is a factor. And so did you put straw on top of the seeds? You need to lightly straw the seeds. It does a couple things. One, it helps maintain that moisture, which is imperative. You got to have that moisture. Even if you water it every day, it's still dry out in the afternoon. This time of year, the days are getting drier.
There's no humidity.
Right. And the soil dries out very fast. Yeah. So you need a light application of straw on top, usually about a bale every 1,000 square foot is a ballpark. Of course, the bales getting smaller all the time.
Yeah, they do.
But you're looking at, you need to put the straw on top and lightly and water it. You need to monitor and make sure you may have to water it every day, especially in the afternoon, even with the straw. But the straw keeps it moist, and it keeps the birds from eating it all up as fast.
Yeah.
If you can get it to germinate, the birds are not a problem.
Oh, so you're covering your centipede with this?
Yeah, my centipede's still growing, so I'm going to have to cut the grass. I mean, it's still growing.
Right.
Should I try to reseed again after I cut the grass, or should I not cut the grass and start watering again, or is the seed
already
dead?
I can tell you this. My ryegrass seed that I put out last fall, it's really weird, just came up.
Well, that's, do you have
weird.
A nuclear power plant near
weird.
You?
Weird, so, and I have never had that to happen. I mean, I told Tony, you know, my sales rep, I was like, my ryegrass seed is not coming up. And I kept waiting, and I kept waiting, and I kept waiting. And it finally is coming up now. That is strange.
Yeah, it is.
Well, waiting till the centipede starts to go dormant is going to be helpful in that respect, but it's going to be hurtful because you're also so late in the season when that happens, all right? So, but I'm going to be honest with you. I've never been a big advocate of overseeding with rye. A ryegrass is allelopathic, and what that means is it puts off chemicals, it keeps other things from growing as well. So if your centipede or your Bermuda grass especially is doing really well and you're trying to rein it in, then maybe the rye. But I try to tell people to enjoy the dormant season. When the grass turns brown and you don't have to use the lawnmower, embrace that and park that lawnmower with some fuel stabilizer from Wombles, and you're good
there
to
you go.
That's right.
I like the contrast of the yellow brown grass, the warm season grass, and its uniformity and the green and other textures and colors around, Brian. So that might be something. Yeah. I have heard from different horticulturists over the years that it overseeding can hurt somewhat a warm season grass.
Well, here's the other biggie. If you put out the ryegrass, then you have to fertilize the ryegrass. Now you're fertilizing the centipede when it's dormant.
And it doesn't like fertilizer.
And if you get one of those little warm spells for a week, it only takes 3 days for centipede to start breaking dormancy. And if you got fertilizer on the ground, it's going to go wildfire. And then when it goes back to cold, you're going to get big dead spots.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of a recipe for big potential problems.
Well, I call it look pretty for a while.
Right. Yeah.
That's why most people plant it, I think.
Yeah, they don't like the yellow or brown.
Make it look pretty for a while.
Yeah. Right.
On farming, that's a different matter. When you're raising hay, we used to do a lot of rye.
That's a cover crop.
And you know about raising hay.
Right.
Oh, absolutely.
Right.
I raise hay and, yeah.
Well, I guess I have to be like some of the...
It's not like raising sand.
Come on, everybody.
Now, Gary, I've got to get into something extremely important here. You're talking about fried collards.
Forget we still got Brian on here. Let's make sure we got him straight first.
When Brian quits, I want you to answer about kale.
I don't think we mentioned that this morning. I mean, you might have a spell or something.
Well, Brian's probably going to say, I'll never call here again after what he heard about ryegrass.
Yeah, I know. Well, it's less work. You don't have to worry about it anymore if you choose to take Gary's route.
But I guess I'm
going to take you guys' advice and do like the golf courses do on the fairways. Just paint them green.
Right. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
There you go.
Absolutely.
Walnut
Creek,
1 year.
The amphitheater does that. A lot of places do that. I believe it is more environmentally friendly. Absolutely it is. But on the other hand, as he was saying with the hayfield and farmers, if you're gardening and you have designated areas that nothing is there in the wintertime, a cover crop is a must.
Yeah,
and ryegrass is a fantastic cover crop.
Right.
Yeah.
That biomass it puts in the soil with those roots and all, it's hard to beat it. It's hard to beat it, and it keeps your everything from being blown off the top of the soil to be blown off the top. It's great. It's absolutely great. And then you can control it in the spring by solarizing it or something and killing it, and then you can plant directly into it and go into a no-till situation, which is even better.
Yeah.
Talk about it, too, by the way, right quick, Rufus. Down in Greenville.
What'd
you say, Brian?
Talk about eating, Rufus, down in Greenville when I used to live down that way. Many years ago, 20 years ago, there was a place called Benner's Grill, and they used to have what was called sweet potato biscuits.
Oh,
man.
Now, wait a minute. You're talking about, I know that place.
Sweet potato biscuits.
Yeah, sweet potato biscuits. Nothing better than those in that little place you're talking about. Are they still existent?
To be honest with you, it's been so long since I've been down there. But to be honest with you, I would be highly shocked if they are.
Is that where you want to go eat lunch?
Well, it was close to a place called Blackjack.
Yeah.
What did they do at Blackjack?
In Honolulu.
Blackjack
Road.
It has a place called Honolulu and Blackjack Road.
Yep.
Brian, we got to go for this hour. I hope that straightened everything out for you. Yeah, right, Bee's Barbecue.
Oh, Lord, yeah.
Brian, call us again.
All right, buddy.
Thank you very much. All right, more of the Weekend Gardener coming up from J.E. Wumble & Sons.
If you don't...
We don't you don't need it. We don't.